science and research is under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
Across California and the nation, supporters of science are marching today, standing up for what they say is an attack on facts and scientific research.
We simply can't sit by and hope for the best. We have to begin to prepare ourselves for what might be an all-out war, especially on climate science.
As environmental regulations are being rolled back in Washington, California defends its efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
The science is there, the truth is there, and whatever the flim-flam artists do or say, we're going to overcome that.
But as scientists take to the streets, do they run the risk of turning science into just another political controversy identified with liberals? I'm Scott Schaefer, and this is special coverage of the March for Science, a statewide production of the California Report and KQED Public Radio. We'll get started right after this news. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this special statewide California Report broadcast from KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Well, on this Earth Day 2017, thousands of people are taking to the streets in Washington, D.C., part of the March for Science, demonstrations of support for basing public policy on scientific research, not politics. That event in Washington was just one of hundreds being held throughout the nation and the world today on six continents, I believe, including, of course, right here in California, in San Diego and Los Angeles, San Francisco and Sacramento. I'm joined this hour by KQED science editor Craig Miller. And Craig, you know, scientists are not necessarily the first people you think of when you think of a march on Washington. Why are they doing it and why now?
They're just about the last people you would think
pretty
of,
much.
You know. And this, I think, Scott, this is the exclamation point on this whole thing. This kind of public demonstration traditionally has been anathema to scientists. These are people who walk wide circles around the political fray. Why? Because they don't want their research and their work tainted by perceptions of their personal political leanings, just like journalists. But the fact that these worldwide demonstrations were not just in support of science, but organized by science represents, I think, a seismic shift. I could use a dip into the scientific lexicon here.
And today is Earth Day. So was this event planned long ago, or is it a result of recent political events?
I think it was kind of inspired by the Women's March that was kind of done
right after the inauguration.
And then there was a thread on Reddit that started talking about it, and it kind of caught fire. The timing of this, well, you know, I think this has been building for a while. I mean, 2 years ago, National Geographic put out an issue with a cover story, The War on Science. You know, the moon landing was faked. You know, vaccines are going to give your kids autism or whatever, you know. But today, this very day, President Trump said in a statement that his administration believes that rigorous science is critical to policymaking. But he says this just at the same time that he's proposing defunding or cutting back on a whole range of scientific endeavors. On the climate front, his budget guy, Mick Mulvaney, has famously said, we're just not going to spend money on that anymore. It's a waste of time. And this all is happening just at the time that science is telling us that, on the climate front, time is running out.
So in a way, scientists are feeling, you know, they have no choice, perhaps, to speak out now because time is wasting.
There's a sense of urgency out there that I think wasn't there 2 years ago. Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned at the top, there are events happening not just throughout the nation, but, of course, here in California. We want to go now to KQED science reporter Lauren Sommer, who is at the event in San Francisco. And, Lauren, set the scene for us, if you would. What's happening and where are you and what's going on?
Yeah, I'm down here at the Embarcadero. The speakers have just wrapped up, and it is literally jam-packed elbow to elbow as thousands of people are kind of filing out of the Embarcadero and heading down Market Street. They're going to be marching down to Civic Center. But it's just a sea of signs just looking down here across Market Street right now, thousands of people.
What are some of the messages that you're seeing in signs and talking to people?
Yeah, I mean, the core message here, and the organizers really wanted to emphasize this, is science, not silence. I mean, this is a march for scientific evidence, using evidence-based science to make policy decisions. All the speakers were really talking about why science is so important to the public good. They did not want this to look like an anti-Trump rally. Now, there have been a few signs. I've seen some resist signs, but most of them have been a little bit cheeky. You know, there's one was an Earth to Science sign. One was Make Earth Great Again. So there's a little bit of sentiment here. You can definitely feel it.
And to what extent are these folks, you know, scientists versus people who work for nonprofit organizations or for universities? I mean, who's there?
Yeah, it's a really broad mix. You know, classrooms of kids are here wearing lab coats with their teachers. But, you know, here in the crowd, I've spotted some of the preeminent scientists in the Bay Area. Climate scientist. I spoke to one particle physicist from Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, top of his field. So there are a lot of people here that maybe who have told me, at least, they've never been to a march like this before.
Lauren, this is Craig. Any sense at all of what the turnout was for this?
Well, we don't have an official count quite yet. It's definitely in the thousands. It's completely jam-packed. And that's what we've heard from a lot of cities around the country so far. But they're really seeing a very large turnout.
And you're saying that there's an effort to make this a nonpartisan event?
Yeah. The messaging all day has been positive, and certainly the discussion before the march was to keep this positive. The sensitivity is that they don't want this to seem like a political rally. They don't want science to be politicized any more than they feel that it already has been. And so I think that's gotten through to most people here. You know, the signs say things like E equals MC squared, deal with it, you know, not anti-Trump.
Nerd humor.
Yeah, there's definitely a risk, I think, probably perceived by a lot of people that, you know, they don't want to alienate the people who are responsible for funding their programs, because so much support for science of every stripe comes from the federal government.
Yeah, and I think people are seeing this as a first step. You know, I've talked to a few people about what their hopes are for what might come out of this. You know, the particle physicist I was speaking to said, you know, he marched for civil rights in the 60s. And he says, you know, any one march may not actually produce the results you wanted to, but the point is to galvanize people who maybe are not accustomed to kind of speaking out politically or trying to you know, participate in that process. So he was hopeful that just people coming together and seeing that they have other folks like them would actually start a lot of things after this particular march.
Lauren, before I let you go, sometimes the environmental movement is described as elite and white. As you look around the crowd there in San Francisco, how much diversity is there?
Yeah, there's a decent mix, and they certainly made a point for the speakers to really have some folks that really talked about diversity, embodied that, talked about how science is something that reaches all people, you know, that it's not just particle physics, that it's things like when you go to the doctor, maybe when you use the internet, these very basic things in our lives. You know, that was the core message, is that all of us are benefiting from science, and they wanted people to know why they think science is so important. So there's definitely been an effort here to kind of bring in some of those voices, because that's certainly been another big question that the organizers have been facing.
All right. KQED science reporter Lauren Sommer reporting this afternoon from San Francisco, one of several marches being held throughout California today. And we'll be going to other cities as well later in the hour. Lauren, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Craig, well, you know, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but what might come of this, do you think? This is it's great always to have a march, no matter what the cause is, you know, rallies people who think the way you do about certain things, whatever it might be. Then what, though?
It's an excellent question. And there are skeptics out there. There are scientists who deliberately stayed home from these marches because they had a little trouble with the concept of a public demonstration. I spoke to one, Robert Young. He wrote, in fact, an op-ed for the New York Times on this point. He's a climate scientist at Western Carolina University, and he just didn't see where this would amount to too much more than preaching to the choir.
Strategically speaking, I don't think a march is going to do any good. I don't think it's going to change the minds of anybody in the Trump administration. I don't think it's going to reach out to constituencies that have become skeptical or disconnected from science. I think that it's going to become another one of those events that basically bounces around in the echo chamber. It'll reach the people who are already believers, but I don't think it's going to change any minds of those who aren't.
He also had some concerns that having it on Earth Day, having it in the form of a street demonstration, might reinforce some perceptions that scientists are, you know, on the left side of the political spectrum. However, he also went on to say that, you know, if these people who are participating in the march continue to be involved, even at their community level, on the school board, talking with people in their local communities, getting to know them, that might have a bigger impact than any of this.
All right. Well, let's go now to the East Coast. There was a sizable march today in Washington, D.C., and Nell Greenfield-Boyce, NPR science reporter, was there, and she joins us now. Nell, how are you?
Hey, I'm glad to be indoors and dry.
Oh, yeah,
it was a very rainy day here in D.C.
Soggy out there. Well, tell us what happened. What did you see?
Well, everybody gathered sort of at the base of the Washington Monument, and it was a sort of slow, steady stream of people from about 9 a.m. on. And the crowds are very similar to what I just heard described in California, you know, a real mix of signs, a lot of them just, you know, supporting the benefits of science generally, you know, signs saying things like, you know, do you remember polio? Like, mm-hmm. I don't, thanks to science, you know, or, you know, like, I'm alive because of science, or science is real. But there were definitely anti-Trump signs as well. There was one sign I remember seeing that said, like, get your tiny hands off my evidence-based science. And there were others that said things like, you know, science invented your spray-on tan or something like that. So, you know, there were definitely people out there who were addressing the concerns folks have about how this administration may be treating science.
Was there any evidence that someone from the administration or any of the federal agencies was there, either as a speaker at the rally or just some kind of presence?
I did not see anyone. I think I read that the one PhD scientist in Congress was going to show up, but I did not see him personally.
And, of course, Washington, D.C. is also home not just to Congress and the White House, but to all kinds of scientific-based organizations and advocacy groups. And what do they feel is at stake here in this, not just the march today, but in this what they perceive as an attack on science?
Well, you know, this movement or this march or rally or whatever you want to call it, since it's happening in so many different places all at the same time, got a lot of support from major scientific organizations that a lot of them have their headquarters here in D.C., like the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the American Geophysical Union. You know, all these organizations have big buildings right here in this town, and they threw their weight behind this effort, which really is kind of extraordinary. I mean, I've been covering science for about 20 years, and I cannot remember ever seeing anything like this, where the scientific community just literally took to the streets. I mean, Constitution Avenue here in D.C. was sort of jammed. I mean, it was a quote-unquote march, but people were kind of inching along because you couldn't march very fast. There were just too many people in front of you. And that's given, you know, given the rain. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. It really shows you how strongly people felt about that, that they were willing to come out and sit around in the pouring rain, you know, for the chance to hold up a sign saying how much they love science and how much they care about it.
Well, and as you pointed out earlier, the polio idea, it's easy to take science for granted, you know. You don't, you know, things that have been solved long ago, you don't really think about it much because there's no reason to, really. But this is sort of a day to remind people that we don't make progress without the kind of scientific research that these folks do.
Indeed, that was one sign I saw. There were a lot of bad science puns, as you know, you can imagine. This is a real opportunity for people to nerd out. So there was one woman who had a geology rock sign, and on the other side it said, "Don't take science for granted." So there you go.
There we go. They do have a sense of humor, those scientists. Nell Greenfield-Boyce reporting today from Washington, D.C., NPR science reporter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
One of the marches in California today is happening down in San Diego, and we're joined now by KPBS science reporter David Wagner. David, welcome, and tell us where you are right now.
So I'm down at the Waterfront Park in downtown San Diego, where speakers are just wrapping up here. We're at the tail end of the march, and what I've been hearing from the reporters in other cities really gels with what I'm seeing down here. Turnout is fairly high, I'd say, for San Diego. I haven't had a chance to get the official turnout numbers yet, but we could comfortably say several thousand people showed up and walked.
Pardon me for stepping on you there. Yeah, I don't think most people think of San Diego as a hotbed of demonstrations. How unusual is something like this for San Diego?
I think it's fairly unusual for San Diego. Now, this march is down here literally walking in the march in the footsteps of the Women's March. They took the same route, started at the same location, ended at the same location. And the turnout, I would say, is not as high as the Women's March here in San Diego earlier this year. But I get the sense that a lot of the marchers today participated in that march, and there's still a lot of momentum and a lot of energy here. People want to keep marching. So we're seeing a lot of pro-science messaging on T-shirts and signs here. But we're also seeing, I think, some messaging that's kind of a holdover from the Women's March.
Hey, this is Craig Miller in the studio up in San Francisco. I'm wondering if there was any opposition in evidence.
I didn't see any people opposing the march show up to protest the demonstrators here. Like you were saying earlier in the show, though, in my reporting leading up to this, some of the skepticism about the march has, interestingly, come from scientists themselves. I spoke to a climate scientist down here, Ram Ramanathan, who's at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. He's very involved in outreach to political and religious leaders about the seriousness of climate change. But he said that he was going to sit out this march because, like others have said, he was worried that participating in this march would paint him as a kind of biased activist, maybe someone who's on the liberal end of the spectrum, and it would taint his ability to have open discussions with conservatives, people who may perceive scientists as having an agenda.
And David, of course, there is a lot of research in San Diego. You mentioned Scripps. That's just one location that receives federal funding. To what extent is some of that reluctance you just mentioned a result of concern that it could affect their federal funding?
I think that's part of it. Scientists are in a tricky place with the funding situation right now. I will say, though, a lot of people who stand to lose funding are out here. There's a lot of people from Scripps. There's a few people from Scripps who spoke today about the seriousness of climate change and why they're marching. There's a big turnout from the Salk Institute, an independent research institution down here that could be very significantly affected by Trump's proposed cuts to the NIH. So I think funding concerns cut both ways. It's inspiring some people to get out, and perhaps it is inspiring some people to stay back.
All right. David Wagner, science reporter for KPBS, reporting today from San Diego. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Scott Schaefer, and you're listening to special coverage of the March for Science on the California Report. It's a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm here with Craig Miller, KQED science reporter, and let's bring in Jared Blumenfeld. He's here with us in the studio as well, former regional administrator with the Environmental Protection Agency. And Jared, you've been gone from that agency for about a year now. It has been quite a year. What are you hearing from, you know, colleagues of yours, either who are still there or who left, about what's going on?
This is a dark time for the EPA. I think they feel under attack. The science certainly is being under attack. And when it comes to EPA regulations, they're really based on science. So clean air, clean water, clean land. The statutes were written in such a way that as we learn more from science about air pollution, as we learn more about toxic things that we can't see that pollute our waterways, the standards are updated to incorporate that new science. So the attack on science really is an attack on environmental regulations because they're driven by scientific advancement. So if you're a climate scientist at EPA and suddenly you see the White House no longer has climate change on it, you hear from across the board in the Trump administration that EPA is promulgating junk science. When you know that science has been peer-reviewed, when you know that science has gone through years and years of analysis before it reaches the day, you're really feeling under siege.
Does it run the risk of people, good people, as we've seen sort of in the State Department and maybe the CIA, who are professionals, longtime career professionals, leaving?
Bailing out.
Yeah, I mean, and what impact could that have?
So it could have a large impact, and I think it is happening because scientists, by and large, and I think that's why this march is really important, they're often extroverted. But one thing that they take very seriously is their own integrity and the integrity of their work. And when that's under threat, when their independence is being questioned, and when they feel alienated, they're going to go somewhere else. And when that happens, there's a big gap in the regulatory system. We all rely on science. Whether we see it, understand it, know it or not, there are people out there looking at everything from radiation in the air after Fukushima to when the Richmond refinery blows up at Chevron. People are there looking, and when you don't have those people on the ground, questions that need to be answered go unanswered.
Jared, speaking of the threat, if I may, Scott, sorry, I just have to ask you this before we go any further. There was a lot of concern about data. Scientific data actually disappearing from government servers under this administration. I think there's been some hyperbole around that. There was one scientist who wrote a high-profile op-ed saying that her citations to her work were actually disappearing. Have you seen or heard about any actual evidence of that happening?
I have not. But really what's more worrying is the defunding. It's easy to point at a smoking gun when data was on a website and now it's gone. But the cuts that are being proposed to basic science at institutions like EPA are really, really frightening in that if you don't gather the data, there's no data to disappear on the server. Literally, you haven't collected it. You don't know what the problem is.
Right.
And so I think that's really the goal here. It is, you know, the march today. I was there in Justin Herman Plaza in it. And I think it's got a particular targeted focus against EPA and regulatory agencies because they protect human health and the environment. And if you move science to the side and say, we're not really going to look at the science, we're just going to look at the economics, which is the language coming out of the Trump administration, that's frightening because the way, especially in places like L.A., Fresno, we got the worst air quality in the nation in California. And if you remove science from that equation and just say, is it going to be expensive to change out these old trucks and tractors? The answer sometimes is yes, But the benefit to human health far outweighs those costs.
Jared Blumenfeld with us today, former regional administrator for the EPA for the Western region. And we are, of course, covering the March on Science. And let's go now to Kishore Hari, who is a March organizer with the California Academy of Scientists. And Kishore is at the March in San Francisco. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. And I'm at the University of California, San Francisco.
Oh, okay. I beg your pardon. Tell us what were the challenges you faced in organizing this march? I mean, was there reluctance that you had to overcome in terms of getting scientists to participate?
So early on, and I'm one of the leaders of the entire March for Science, and particularly I oversaw all of the satellite marches globally. When we first started, our perception was that this would be a march in D.C., and that quickly was disabused. And we knew that many cities around the country wanted to do this within a few days. But even then, our estimates were maybe 50 marches. We just passed 610 marches that have happened so far in the last 24 hours around the world. That far exceeded the notion. And while when we first started out, there was a lot of conversation about whether scientists should do this, whether to politicize the work, I think a reality dawned on the larger community that this was happening, that there was a tone and tenor underneath the march that we had tapped into, a real frustration, a real desire for something to change long-term if we were going to value facts and the importance of scientific research.
And here, of course, in the United States, what is precipitating a lot of this is the Trump administration. But you've been organizing these marches around the world. To what extent is that same concern being felt, you know, on other continents?
I think you're seeing every community take the shape of what that community really values. In Brazil, they just instituted 40% cuts to government funding, and there's marches across the entire nation. In France, they're going to the polls tomorrow. And a number of marches were really focused on influencing voters to take science as a value to those polls. In Ghana, it was a conversation about GMO. In South Africa, it was a march for STEM education and better access to that education. Here in the United States, I've noticed differences in communities, even just going from the larger cities to the rural setting. I think what I'm most impressed with is the definition of who is a scientist and who values that has really shifted. I see so many teachers and educators and farmers out on the streets that I think the notion that where we place our value on science is going to be shifted come tomorrow morning.
Kishore, this is Craig Miller in the studio with Scott. Obviously, the incoming administration has been a catalyst for this. But where do you think, because this does predate the Trump administration by quite a bit. Earlier, we talked about a National Geographic cover story, The War on Science, from 2 years ago. Where do you think this war on science is coming from?
I think there's long been a frustration that's been held over probably 10 to 15 years of a decline in this nation's interest and support for science, not from its people, but from its government. And that's reflected both in funding, but most importantly, reflected in how people talk about the science, that they talk about the scientists as being liars and frauds and denying the output of their work.
And
really has led to a frustration.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. But when you describe people talking about science in that way, are we talking about certain news organizations and certain publications on the right of the political spectrum? And when you say government isn't really supporting fundamental scientific research, is that a bipartisan problem?
I think we've seen issues on both sides of the aisle where that has come up. But this is a reaction to something in erosion, an erosion of support, public support for scientists themselves. And that's reflected in the community. We've been talking about STEM education as a need to meet our workforce development for nearly 20 years now. And we still have so much, we have a long way to go yet to accomplish those goals. So these are not simply one topic issues. It's not simply climate. It's not simply the EPA. It's not simply funding. I think you're seeing a larger outpouring catalyzed by recent policies.
And Kishore, your employer, UC San Francisco, and the university generally has, not endorsing, not sponsoring this march in any way. Does that put you and your colleagues in a difficult spot at all?
While they work at UCSF and the University of California did not endorse the march, I felt deeply encouraged as an individual to go express myself. And I've heard that same sentiment across the entire University of California system. So I share no frustration. I think university institutions, research labs, private companies have been incredibly supportive generally about their scientists and all of their employees going out to express themselves today.
All right. Kishore Hari is a march organizer with the UC San Francisco campus. Thanks so much for joining us, Hari. Kishore, rather. Appreciate your being with us. And let's go now from one of the bluest parts of the country to one of the reddest. Joe Wirtz is an environment reporter with State Impact Oklahoma, which, of course, is home to Scott Pruitt, the new head of the EPA.
And where one out of five jobs, I think, is the statistic, is basically supported by the fossil fuels industry.
And so, Joe Wirtz, given that context, what happened in Oklahoma today?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the context of the one in five jobs here in Oklahoma being tied to the oil and gas industry. The science march today happened at the Oklahoma Capitol, which has a working oil well on the Capitol grounds. It's the only Capitol in the country that has a working oil well on it. So we had the science march and the science rally happening essentially between the state capitol and a working oil well.
And who was there? I mean, is it was this what people in Oklahoma would regard as the fringe?
You know, it was not a huge group. We certainly had, probably more than 1,000 people out there today. But it was a lot of different people from a lot of different kind of walks. We certainly had university scientists. We had, doctors. We had, dentists that were out there talking about, they had, biomedical training and use science every day. And, a lot of engineers. We had folks out from the National, Weather Service and these, severe storm laboratories that are here in Oklahoma, kind of ground zero for weather research and study. So they're out there with their radar equipment and giving demonstrations, some of these meteorologists and things like that. So it was a good mix of people and certainly a lot of kids and kind of educational things trying to, show people and remind people how much science plays a role in the world around us and really everything in day-to-day life.
Joe, it's Craig Miller in the studio with Scott. You mentioned it was not an enormous turnout. You also said that, the National pointed out that the National Weather Service has a major science facility right there in Norman.
Right.
But given the broad support for the fossil fuel industry that you've seen in Oklahoma and is traditional there, was there any ambivalence about this march on the part of the broader community?
You know, if there was, I certainly didn't see that. Now, I wasn't everywhere at once at the march, so I didn't see any pressure against that. It was not to diminish any of the people coming out. There were certainly a big lively crowd. They packed the area in front of the Capitol. So, but not throngs of people shutting down the street or anything. To that matter. So no, I didn't sense any pushback. But given sort of the oil industry's role in the state, it wasn't. I don't know if that's what kept some people from participating in the thing, but I didn't get a sense of any pushback came out.
And yeah. Joe, what did the fact that the EPA administrator, your former attorney general, Scott Pruitt, is a climate skeptic, shall we say, I guess, to say the least, how is that received in your state? Is that a point of pride?
Well, it's certainly among the people that were out at the march today. There were signs about Pruitt. There were signs urging action. Not only action as far as urging people to call their lawmakers in Congress and in D.C. Certainly, lots of signs with Inhofe's phone number and things like that, and certainly signs about. I doubt it was his cell phone, but urging action on that, contacting lawmakers at the national level, but also a real organization to do stuff with state officials. You know, Oklahoma is struggling with budget cuts, and so there are lots of there are scientists out there saying we need money for a better public health laboratory, and we need funding for science, and there's these science education bills that are going through that detractors say would support climate skepticism and things like that. So a real sense of urgency, a real sense of political urgency, not only at the national level, but really at the local level too. And that seems to be a really big rallying point for the people that were there at the march today in Oklahoma.
All right. Joe Wirtz from Oklahoma Public Radio, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jared Blumenfeld, it does remind you, I suppose, you, of course, were the regional administrator for the Western region, which I assume did not include Oklahoma.
It did not.
We're a different world out here, aren't we?
We are in many ways, but at the same time, the science that is developed nationally has application in California. The standards for air quality and water quality, for instance, there was a big controversy in the Bush administration about the amount of arsenic you could have in drinking water. Those things now kind of pale in comparison to where we're currently at, which is basic denial of science around climate change. Justin Herman Plaza is very vulnerable to climate change. The Bay Area is very vulnerable to climate change. So if you ignore science about sea level rise, if you ignore science about the changing weather patterns, that has huge impacts on how you design infrastructure, where your money goes. So to me, this is a targeted, focused effort on avoiding making the big changes that we need to as a society, if we assume that climate change is real, which it is. So the only way to get out of that responsibility is saying the science is junk.
Let's go now back to the march in San Francisco. Hana Al-Samad is an associate professor of biochemistry and biophysics at the UCSF School of Medicine. And welcome to the program, Hana.
Hi.
So you, I know, have been thinking of this in terms of a sort of a global event today. How are the issues that are being discussed at the rally in San Francisco, how are they thought about, and how do they affect people, not just, of course, here in the Bay Area, but well beyond here in other countries, especially developing countries?
So as you might have seen on, Facebook and various, media outlets, there are sister marches throughout the world. And It is truly the case that science that is done in this country and the image of scientists and progress that transmitted to the rest of the world has great impact on the rest of the world, and especially developing countries who have always looked up to us in this country in the U.S. For inspiration and also for health and for medicine and for environmental reform and issues like this. So what we do is being watched very, very carefully and all around the world. And we have to get this right. We have to continue our progress. We have to be at the forefront of science and research. And we have to be leaders of the world in that. Now, the other aspect of this, which might be also pertinent to this question, is the issue of diversity in science and the fact that a lot of our scientists come from abroad. I myself am an immigrant who came to this country to do the best research I could because the U.S. is the beacon, the scientific beacon of the world. One thing that is at stake in this march, I think, among many other things, is, the idea that the U.S. will continue to be the scientific beacon of the world, and it's a place where the best and brightest minds can come to make big discoveries.
All right, Hannah El-Samad, March organizer and participant, I should say, associate professor of biochemistry at the UCSF School of Medicine. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. You're listening to special coverage of the March for Science on the California Report. It's a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm here in the studio with Craig Miller, KQED Science Editor, as well as Jared Blumenfeld, former regional administrator with the Environmental Protection Agency. And let me also bring in now Connie Roser-Renouf, who is an associate research professor at the Center for Climate Change Communication at George Mason University in Virginia. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So communication and science, it seems like part of this event today across the world is to communicate to people who are not necessarily scientists the importance of science, right?
Right.
And how big a challenge is that?
I don't think it's that hard. I think that people basically in this country do trust scientists, and they trust climate scientists. The majority of Americans, about three-quarters of Americans, trust climate scientists for information on global warming.
And so why isn't it then a bigger priority for politicians, for example?
Well, that may have to do with who's funding them. It has in part to do with, if we look at Exxon, for example, they've known since the 1970s that global warming was happening, and yet they've been funding disinformation campaigns all these years that confuse the issue. And I think that it's a matter of people who don't want to face the solutions that we need to take.
It's well documented, Connie, there has been a well-funded effort by the fossil fuel industry to cast doubt on the climate science over the years. And this has started quite a while ago, actually. But don't you think there has to be more to it than that? Something about our culture, something about our belief system and our value system here in this country that makes it – that creates an obstacle for people to really – especially on the climate front – to really accept the prevailing science.
That it entails government regulation, more government regulation, and that a lot of people who value individual freedom and resent any kind of government regulation resist the science because they resist the solutions.
Exactly, because if we're going to do anything about this, it almost by definition has to involve more government involvement and probably more regulation.
Right.
Well, and we also live in a country where evolution is not necessarily on equal footing with creationism, or it is on equal footing sometimes in some schools where creationism is taught as valid a theory as evolution. Is that part of the issue as well that we're up against?
Yes, I think absolutely. I remember I talked to a professor at UCLA who studied evolution in the schools and how to teach it. And she said she got so discouraged she thought she'd go to something easy, climate change. And then things changed.
They got worse.
She was back where she was to start.
Yeah.
You mentioned, Connie, that about three out of four Americans right now accept the climate science. I've seen recent polling that about two-thirds believe that global warming is caused by human activity, and almost the same number in same proportion, think that the effects of climate change have already started and will pose a serious threat even in their own lifetimes. How has that changed? How has the needle moved over the years, going back to, say, you know, Al Gore and an Inconvenient Truth?
Well, I'd say we are now about back to where we were when Al Gore won the Nobel Prize, there was a lot of public support for action on climate change, a lot of recognition that it was real and problematic. And then we had the recession, and we had ClimateGate, and we had the failure of the talks in Copenhagen. And between 2008 and the beginning of 2010, the proportion of Americans who believed that climate change was happening dropped by 15-20%. And we have only
clawed our way back.
That's right. Very slowly, particularly over the past 2 years. And also, I'd say an optimistic thing is that a lot of the change that has come over the past 2 years has been among Republicans.
Well, Governor Jerry Brown was speaking this week at a conference in San Francisco. It was a carbon conference, the future of carbon and so on. As he often does, Jerry Brown was pontificating on a lot of different interesting things. But one of the things he did talk about is the difficulty of focusing politicians and policymakers on a long-term problem like climate change. Let's hear a little bit of what he had to say.
Now, most people don't want to think about catastrophe. I'm not one of those people. I like to think about catastrophe. Most politicians think the only catastrophe is their electoral defeat. And I've experienced that. And I don't like it. But in order to avoid it, you have to think about it and do things that create the opposite, which is victory. But those are trivial little problems, whether you win or lose an election. We're talking about our way of life and will it be sustained.
And let me just put it out to any of you, and let me ask you, Jared Blumenfeld, former EPA administrator, you know, what does it take to get not just politicians, but people like we're seeing on healthcare now, where people are going to these town hall meetings and demanding action on the Affordable Care Act? What does it take to get to that point on something as sort of ephemeral as the environment? Mm. You know, we've seen now years of these storms and floods and all kinds of catastrophic incidents, and yet we seem stuck in terms of public policy.
So, yeah, the needle has moved maybe on what the public thinks, but it hasn't moved in Congress. Mm. So 10 years ago, the House passed a cap-and-trade bill. It's gone absolutely nowhere since, and now we have a president that's a climate denier. So I think part of the answer is today. Part of the answer for me is scientists saying we have a voice and we can be independent, we can be impartial and say, you know what, we need to be listened to, we need to be protected, and we need to be funded. So I think today is a watershed moment for people starting to think, you know what, this is part of my life, this is likely to happen, and what do we do as a consequence to plan for that? Jerry Brown is a great national leader on this. I think by having cities like LA, San Diego, San Francisco step up and say, we're taking climate action, other cities, other places around the country are saying, you know what, we can do this too. We can move towards solar energy. We can move towards recycling. We can move towards these things that can be done, are feasible, and are supported by science.
But so often it seems like it's posed as a trade-off between the environment and the economy. And you can't have good economic. You talked about the cost, for example, of retrofitting trucks and getting dirty trucks off the roads and getting clean trucks and so on. That there's a short-term cost to that, and it's hard to see what the long-term benefit is. But is that just a lot of people will say that's a false choice anyway.
It's a completely false choice. I mean, the United States has reduced emissions from cars into our waterways from factories by about 80% since the first Earth Day. And yet our economy has grown by leaps and bounds. So those two things, if you look at China, if you look at a typical winter day in Beijing or Mexico City, those are the things that are hampering those economies from growing. The environment, you need clean air to breathe. You need clean water to drink. And without those, you can't have an economy that flourishes. So these are part and parcel of the same thing.
I just have to interject that Donald Trump said today in his Earth Day message, an interesting observation, if you want to call it that. He said economic growth enhances environmental protection. I would submit it's the other way around, actually, and I think we've proven that here in California.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of jobs to be had in the clean industry, clean energy industry, and retrofitting and energy efficiency, all those things. But it comes down to a policy choice, doesn't it?
It does. But even if we look at solar power, and look at the coal industry. So Trump came in saying he's going to support the coal industry. There's as many coal employees as there are people working at Arby's. There's now two times that many people working in the solar industry. Solar power is now cheaper than coal and gas to install. And so the economics of some of this is going to take care of itself. Unfortunately, when it comes to things like toxics, the president and Scott Pruitt just announced they're going to put someone who is a scientist from the American Chemistry Council in charge of protecting us from toxic chemicals. So, that's where we have real problems is people that are not interested in looking at independent science, but they're putting, I would analogize it to the cigarette debate. Mm-hmm. There are people here who will show you science that says that smoking is good for you. And the same is true with all the environmental issues we're now facing.
But Connie, Scott used the term ephemeral to describe climate change. You know, it is, after all, a slow-motion train wreck. And it seems like it's really hard for people to get their head around that, to react to something like that that's unfolding so gradually, all of the severe weather events notwithstanding. I think people are, it seems to me, are much more influenced by the here and now. Is that part of the problem as well?
Yeah, that we have. We see this over and over again in the surveys that we do, that as in terms of perceived harm from climate change, every step you take farther away from me, to my family, to my community, to the U.S., to people in developing countries, future generations, risk perceived harm is higher for people who are farther away from us. Nonetheless, in this country, the majority of people, like three quarters of the population, wants us to regulate CO2. Two-thirds want us to stay in the Paris Agreement. 80% support renewables, increase in renewables, and reductions in fossil fuel use.
Then why don't we elect people who want the same thing?
Well, I think
they have to get campaign contributions from people that believe that.
Yeah. I guess.
But you know, if you look back at political scientists who have looked at the passage of environmental legislation, what they find is that you need not only public opinion, but you need to have it amplified by protests. Mm. And so I think that's part of the reason that this demonstration is so important, that all of the demonstrations, the one that will happen next week on climate change specifically, and the one that happened before, the Women's March, they help by putting it, by making it clear to the people in power that we're not just passively saying we support this, but we're actively supporting it. Oh, go ahead.
No. I was just finish your thought. I wanted to go down to Los Angeles, but I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Scott, I just wanted to say 40,000 people is the number I saw for Chicago. And this was a so-called satellite march, not even the main event in Washington.
Yeah, so larger than you might expect. Well, let's go now to Los Angeles, where another march is happening this afternoon. Emily Guerin is a reporter for KPCC in Pasadena. And Emily, what's happening in L.A. today?
All right, so the march is wrapping up now, but I got an early start. I took a bus over from UCLA with some students there, and it was pretty interesting talking to them. I talked to a couple different folks, mostly who were, you know, environmental science or biochem or engineering majors, and one of the themes that kept coming up was concern for the kind of job opportunities that are going to be available in the sciences after they graduate. One of the students I talked to wants to be a wildlife biologist, and she was talking about how for a lot of her peers, it's like the federal agencies are sort of this fallback. You know, you can get an internship doing field biology, you can work for USGS or the Forest Service, and she's really concerned about some of these proposed cuts to these agencies because it's just going to make it harder, she thinks, for people like her to get a job. And I heard that from another student who's really interested in corporate social responsibility, and she's worried that under the current administration, corporations just might not have those values as much as they used to, and so that would make it a harder field for her to get into. So there was some real kind of economic anxiety there.
And Emily, again, Los Angeles, not always a hotbed of political activity. Were there any elected officials down there, people who said, you know, perhaps this is their first demonstration that they attended, anything like that?
I did talk to a couple folks who said that they hadn't been very politically active in the past, but that they just felt really compelled to do so now. All the students I talked to did vote. I did ask them. They had all at least voted. I talked to a professor also from UCLA. He's a biologist. He had just kind of dabbled in activism in the past, but he said this was the first time he really sort of felt he felt like he couldn't just sit back, because if he did, he would be condoning what had happened. So he was actually there with his elderly mother. She was in a wheelchair. He had made her a sign that said, "I won't forget. My son is an Alzheimer's researcher." And so he works on diseases like Alzheimer's. And part of why he was there is he relies really heavily on this. He described it as a shopping mall-sized X-ray machine that Argonne National Lab in Chicago has there. And he sends samples over there a lot to be processed. And President Trump has recommended a $2 billion cut to the Department of Energy, and they, of course, fund the national labs. And he's really concerned he's not going to be able to do the work he does on diseases if funding to the national labs is cut. So it was really personal for him, and I think that's what compelled him to be involved kind of for the first time in this protest way.
Emily, Craig Miller with Scott here in San Francisco. To his question about elected officials or politicians showing up or making speeches, my understanding is that part of the organization of this day was to try to avoid that.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the sense you got to?
You know, I do think
there was a fear about politicizing the science, and that, and I know you all have been talking about that on the program, and that was something that I asked folks, was if that was a concern for them about even coming to the rally. And yeah, I think you could see that in the choice of speakers. I mean, although I will say one person we did have that was interesting was Tom Steyer, who, you know, is definitely, you know, mixing activism and politics and science. And so he was sort of a notable choice. But many of the other speakers were scientists themselves. We had Lucy Jones, a very famous seismologist. We had a number of folks from the public health community here speaking about air quality, which obviously is one of our, you know, top environmental issues in Los Angeles. But people here didn't seem that concerned about politicizing science. A lot of people I asked said, you know, well, the administration did it first. They sort of attacked us. And so now we're here standing up for ourselves. But they made the first move.
All right. Emily Guerin from KPCC in Los Angeles, reporting from the March for Science down there today. Thanks so much, Emily.
No problem.
You know, I want to, we've got a few minutes left here, this notion of changing minds and hearts and changing policy. And let me ask you, Connie Roser-Renouf, you know, what does it take to communicate these kinds of complicated issues in ways that aren't jargony? You know, earlier Jared was talking about the refineries in Richmond, and things that are tangible to people. You know, you have to get away from sort of lofty descriptions.
Ivory tower
concepts, descriptions.
Yeah,
what we find is that people who support action on climate change understand, they're certain that it's real. And at this point, about 45% of the American public is certain that climate change is real. They understand that it's harmful, and that it's harmful to people, not just to polar bears, and that it's happening here and now. The more we can localize the impacts of climate change so that people do understand. That's one thing that's really great about weathercasters, as people who can connect what's happening in the weather today to long-term climate.
They're very often the only real exposure to a quote, scientist that many Americans have.
Absolutely.
On a daily basis.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead. Finish.
They need to understand that it's human caused, and that has proven to be a very difficult point to get across to Americans. We've had limited success in persuading people that we are the ones who are causing this. And then they need hope. They have to believe that it's a solvable problem, because if there's nothing we can do to reduce what's happening, then let's just change the subject. And I want to say that scientists communicating that, it's so important for them to be doing that, because there's only like 10% of the American public that realizes that there's a scientific consensus on this. And what we find is that scientists advocating not for specific policies but for action do not lose trust of the public.
Jared, just less than a minute left. What are you hoping for, planning for that matter, going forward? What needs to happen after today?
So today, I think people are rallying around scientists. What needs to happen tomorrow is to protect those scientists in their jobs, to realize that each and every member of Congress gets to vote on these budgets, and that if you line out science from the budget, climate change may seem like far away, but right here in California, right now in Fresno, in LA, across the state, we have pressing environmental issues that directly also relate to climate change, clean air, clean water, our coastline. And if those budgets do not include money for scientists, and if those scientists are not supported and their integrity is not kept independent, we lose the values that we hold so dearly, which is a clean environment and independent science.
All right. Jared Blumenfeld, former regional administrator with the Environmental Protection Agency, thanks so much for coming in today. And
thanks
to all of our guests, including Craig Miller, for being with us this hour. You've been listening to special coverage of the March for Science, a special broadcast of the California Report and KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our engineer is Katie McMurrin, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman. Guy Marzorati is our director. Kat Snow is our producer. Ingrid Becker is the senior producer. Ethan Lindsay is our managing editor, and Holly Kernan is the vice president for news. We have continuing coverage of today's March for Science at kqed.org, and I invite you to go there and check that out for the rest of the afternoon. For Craig Miller and all of us here at KQED, I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening.